Good morning and welcome to a new episode of Teen Health Matters. I'm Dr. Jacqueline Dujay with my co-host, Sinead.
Hi, good morning, everyone.
So today joining us is Dr. Cora Bruner, who is a professor of Department of Pediatrics, Adolescent Medicine Division, an adjunct professor of orthopedics and sports medicine at Seattle Children's Hospital. Dr. Bruner is also a co-author of the newly released Pediatrics Clinical Report, Adolescent and Young Adult Tattooing, Piercing, and Scarification. So welcome, Dr. Bruner.
Thank you so much for having me on.
All right, so we'll start in with our first question.
All right, so Dr. Bruner, if you could just give us a synopsis of what exactly is body modification and how prevalent is it among teens today?
That's a fantastic question, and it's a good lead into how we actually got around to writing this report. And at first, I thought about writing this report when my teenage daughter, who's now 23, but at 18, she wanted to get her belly button pierced. And I was unable to help her. She asked her doctor mom to help her find a place that was clean and would not hurt so much. Of course, my first blush on the whole thing was, no, you can't do that. But then I realized she was 18 and she was going to do it anyway. So I looked to my pediatrician colleagues for guidance on how to find the right place and found there wasn't anything really concisely written in the literature. So I went ahead and got the team that I work with, the Committee on Adolescents at the American Academy of Pediatrics, to write this policy. Initially, it was going to be just on tattooing and piercing, and then we decided there's a lot more that people do to their bodies. So that's why we changed the whole topic from just tattooing and piercing to body modification. So I know it's a huge term, and it has had a lot of people asking me to truly delineate what it is. And so really, the bottom line is it's an attempt by somebody to change their physical appearance in a way that they like and in a way that makes a statement and shows others their individuality. But the problem with it is that it can also lead to common complications and decisions that are made that people might regret. And so the question is, how common is it among teens today? Is an interesting one because, honestly, most states will not tattoo anyone under the age of 18 unless they have permission by their parents. That's only a few states. In most states, it's a blanket no if you're under 18. So how prevalent it is among teens, you have to actually change that to young adults because I think it's more prevalent in young adults. Occasionally, you'll see a teenager that's been tattooed that's under the age of 18, and that might be either because they're in a state where their parents said it's cool or because they got it done by a tattoo parlor or a piercing salon and they shouldn't have. So that's worrisome, obviously, because it's illegal. And I don't know if kids that young really know exactly what they're doing and can honestly say that in 20 years they're going to be happy they did that.
I know we're really familiar with tattoos and piercings. We see that a lot with celebrities and athletes, but can you give us an idea of exactly what you mean by scarification? Because I don't think that's really a term everyone is familiar with.
So it's when people deliberately scar themselves in a way that's like a tattoo, honestly, but it's their skin that develops increased pigment or scar tissue in the area where they've cut themselves or even burned themselves. And ultimately, it leads to either a word or a... It's not actually as common as tattooing and piercing, but we put it in there just so that people knew that modification existed.
And you had mentioned in the report, and I think we're also familiar that, you know, body modification has been around for a long time, even for centuries. So what do you think is the cause for its recent surge in popularity or what appears to be a surge in popularity?
Honestly, that's a topic for a lot of discussion, and I think since the report has come out, there has been a lot of discussion about this particular piece, because as you know, in the report, there's some discussion about employment and visibility of tattoos, and I know we're going to get into that later, but honestly, I think the reason why we're seeing up to 30, 40, and sometimes even 50% of young adults who have a tattoo, and might even be higher in the next 5 or 10 years, is a couple things. One is it's somebody wants to have something memorable on their body that reminds them of a time or that it allows them some individuality or autonomy, or it's just pretty. And I think in the olden times, I think the people who got tattoos, it may have been not for good reasons. So it may have been because they were prisoners, or it was part of some kind of a gang, or it was not necessarily indicative of a positive experience. And that piece about tattoos we wanted to dispel, because that's not what is the reason people do this. It's more an expression of self. That being said, I think that the visibility of tattoos can be somewhat alarming to people who aren't used to seeing them. So my generation and the baby boomer generation is still quite alarmed with this and doesn't like to see tattoos much. And so they want them to be covered around them. They don't want to see them. But younger generation, my kids, they are young adults, and they actually could care less, really, honestly, if there's a tattoo. In fact, it's something that a lot of times people are proud of, because they're quite beautiful.
And I guess we can all be of the sound mind that, you know, adolescents and young adults should be aware of the associated risks of tattooing and piercing and body modification and how these practices can affect them. So what should they consider before actually engaging in body modification?
The things that are really important is that teenagers and adults really need to be aware of the permanence of this. And I think many times in the younger generation, things just go by so quickly. You can just swipe and everything goes away. Next picture, next Instagram, next post. And for honest reasons, that I want to be crystal clear, that's not what happens with tattooing and most piercings. So those decisions that they make about that, they need to really think about. So, and they need to be aware that there are risks and that they should be prepared. So in other words, if they're going to get a piercing or tattoo, they should make sure that their immunizations are up to date, that they have up-to-date tetanus, hepatitis, that they are quite aware that the salon or studio they're going to uses sterile techniques, and that they follow the rules, which are no tattooing or piercing underage. They don't, and they should not tattoo or pierce somebody that's under the influence. They shouldn't tattoo or pierce somebody that's either drunk or high. They really need to be careful if they have a chronic illness, like Crohn's disease or lupus or even cancer, that does affect their immune system. And they might be on a medication if they have particularly significant asthma and they're on prednisone for that they probably should not get a tattoo or piercing, because the drugs for that or the illness itself might make the healing a lot slower for one of those tattoos or piercings, to take a lot longer or even get infected and or scar. And so they could get quite sick from something like that. Whereas in somebody with a completely intact, robust immune system, it'd be fine. So this is just, I don't mean to scare people, but I just want people to understand that, and that's the whole point of this report, that we're not saying yay or nay or yes or no to this. We're just trying to inform. Well, initially we're trying to inform pediatricians, but this particular report is available to everyone free through the Academy of Pediatrics website. So anyone can read and download this and use it and take it and go over it with their kids or go over it with themselves. Make sure that they are completely informed about risks and complications and even contraindications, actually, to getting a tattoo or a piercing.
So, Dr. Brunner, you did a great job of going over some of the precautions teens should think about, even young adults, if they have particular chronic health conditions. But even for those who, with or without chronic health conditions, what are some more specific health risks that are associated with body modification?
Well, in anyone, whether they have a chronic illness or not, they could get an infection at the site. So if they're pierced at the belly button, and they don't take care of it. It takes a long time, actually, for a belly button or navel piercing to heal, up to 6 to 9 months. So if they don't take care of it, keep it clean, make sure that they're not wearing a lot of tight clothing around their waist all day, all night, so that it can sort of air out a part of the day, they can get infected. And then if it gets infected, it can have, I guess, a local small infection, or it could spread and get through all the skin, which would be pretty devastating. Other places where people get pierced, which are their nipples, not only does that super hurt, I'm told. But if you're considering breastfeeding in the future, it can interfere with that, because it can interfere with the anatomy of the nipple and make it more difficult for the baby to latch on. Obviously, you cannot breastfeed with jewelry in your nipples, so you have to take the jewelry out before you breastfeed. And then, once it's out, it's very difficult to reinsert, because the hole might close. So then you have to get it repierced and go through all that pain and trauma again. So I think many people don't even think that they're going to have a kid someday when they do stuff like that. But then when it comes to it, the time that they do, it can lead to regret. And I think that would be a hard conversation to have with someone 5 or 10 years after they got something done that they shouldn't have. So that's why I understand that people do this, but I think they really need to understand the 1, 5, and 10 year down the road issues related to that.
So I was actually...
And tongue piercing too, actually. Let's go to that. Tongue piercing is also a problem, because it can not only obviously hurt, but if the piercer hits a blood vessel, that could cause a super big swelling in the tongue, it's a hematoma. And that can interfere with breathing. So that, or the jewelries can fall out and you could, by accident, breathe it in, which would be pretty devastating. And actually, the dental profession, they don't like these at all, because they lead to a lot of chipping of the enamel, not in the front, but in the back of the teeth. That's where the jewelry in the tongue would hit the back of the teeth and cause enamel to chip off, which doesn't get replaced. And then they have to deal with that with significant dental reconstruction. But not everybody gets that with tongue piercings, obviously, but the people just need to know that is a significant complication.
So you did mention that the site selection of tattoos and piercings seems to affect the different complications that might arise from getting these different types of body modifications. So what exactly do you think causes the infections, and what are ways that teens can actually prevent getting them?
Those are really good points. And the thing that the piercers and tattoo artists know is exactly how to take care of this. They, and you guys have gone to the salons or tattoos studios yet, because a lot of the people who've talked to me have actually gone out and gone to a number of salons or studios in their communities just to see what it is, what is going on in them. So, and I did. As soon as I started writing, well, after I navigated it with my daughter, and it took like 2 years for this to get published, mind you, so we've been working on this report for over 2 years. I went to a number of places in Seattle. Full disclosure, I went in and said, I'm a doctor, I just want to see how clean your place is and what kind of complications you have. I just want to see what you got here. And all of them were just pretty much incredibly open and just so grateful that I was coming in there and trying to raise this to an awareness that there's not this sort of seedy black back alley and gross yuck, you know, this is what happens. But no, this is a legit industry. And for the most part, those who do it really want to make sure that standards are followed. So, to be honest, they have the best descriptions on how to take care of these. They give you like 5 or 6 pages of information on how to keep it clean. Don't use hydrogen peroxide and don't put polysporin on it. Or use sterile gloves when you're changing your jewelry, or on and on and on. So what I keep telling my patients is, look, I'm not a tattoo artist. I'm not a piercer. When you get it done, follow their instructions, because they know what they're doing. They do it all day, every day. So don't skip out on what they say, because a lot of people, you know, throw those pieces of paper out or say, well, what do they know? And they know a lot. So I learned a lot, because I was wrong, actually, with what I thought was the way to take care of these. They do a lot of saline, salt water, cleaning versus just water, and they do a lot of have you come back and they take a look at it whenever you want to make sure it's okay, and if they're at all concerned, they have you go to your primary care provider, which I think is awesome. So I think that's the key message I want to make sure that the listeners hear is, if they're going to do it, follow the instructions that they give you to the letter, so that and go back and have them look at it, because if you think your healthcare provider actually has seen a lot of these and a lot of complications, they haven't. Or if they have, they don't actually completely know, except a few different antibiotics to use. But the piercers actually know a whole lot more about this So we've had actually piercers come and talk to us in our clinic about how to take care of these, to be honest with you, because it's a whole industry and awareness that I didn't actually have until I started researching it. Does that make sense? I mean, I know I'm going on and on, but it is important to recognize that maybe your healthcare provider has not seen a lot of this.
Yeah, and I think a lot of parents and teens and young adults would be wiser for, you know, heeding that advice. So we're going to take a short break, and then we'll be back with Dr. Bruner.
Opioids are highly addictive drugs, even when prescribed. If misused, they can lead to overdose and even death. One opioid overdose is too many. You have the power to save a life. If you or someone you know are misusing prescription opioids such as oxycodone or other forms of opioids like heroin or fentanyl, please call the Howard County Health Department for treatment options and opioid overdose response training at 410-313-6202 or visit the website at howardcountymd.gov/get help.
Welcome back to Teen Matters. We're going to get back into our conversation about body modification with Dr. Bruner. In the article, you use a term NSSI. So I was just wondering if you could explain a little bit more about what NSSI is and the difference between that and body modification.
That was something that we decided to put in there because many people feel that doing tattooing and lots of piercing is a form of self-harm. So the term for this is non-suicidal self-injury, which is if somebody is deliberately trying to hurt themselves without actually suicidal intent. So it's a long abbreviation for a longer thing to discuss. So NSSI, non-suicidal self-injury. This is not, I think the point is that people that do body modification, tattoos and piercing aren't deliberately trying to hurt themselves in a way that isn't suicidal, but is in the self-harm world. So it's a double negative. What we're trying to say is this is not that. So, because a lot of times you see people with lots of piercings and think this person is deliberately trying to hurt themselves, and that's not true. So we just wanted to take tattoos and piercings out of that particular bucket. I mean, there is such an entity that exists, but that's not what we see when we see people with multiple piercings or tattoos.
Again, another very important point, and I think that's why we wanted to make sure that people understood that, you know, body modification, like you said before, a lot of people are, you know, are making choices to do this because of beauty, or there might be a significant memory associated with doing the body modification, and, you know, and again, and I think Shanae is going to talk a little bit more about this, is that it has become more socially accepted to have piercings and tattoos. So I think that's important to discuss.
Yeah, and I think to play off of that, you know, I can remember maybe 10 years ago or more, you see people with tattoos and piercings and you kind of associate that with risky behaviors like drugs and alcohol and, you know, other violence and things. But the fact that it's growing in popularity and you see more and more teens and young adults and even older adults with tattoos and piercings, I want to say it's almost safe to assume that association isn't, I don't want to say it doesn't exist, but I guess you can't really associate the two as much as we did maybe 10 years ago. What do you think, Dr. Bruner?
Right. Yeah, that's a really good point. And it is pretty ubiquitous, right? I mean, you go, well, we have 120 pediatric residents at Seattle Children's Hospital, and 75 are women. I would say probably 50 of the 75 have a nose piercing.
Oh, wow.
And maybe 25 have a visible tattoo. And I don't know how many don't. I haven't asked them. The patients don't care at all. Well, they're babies. Mm-hmm. The pediatrics. The parents don't care. And in my generation, yeah, you're right. There's definitely, wow, have I gotten a lot of people talking to me, my saying, since this report's been published, hey, Cora, have you gotten a tattoo yet? Or, hey, let's go do it. And I haven't, actually, but I certainly have a lot of friends my age that have a tattoo, a rose or a Celtic cross or a hummingbird in their ankle, whatever. And they're proud of it. Not only is it like, it's not something they regret by any means. And they're like, oh yeah, I got this last weekend. I love this. The whole world has changed a little bit. But again, in different geographies are different things. For example, we looked at the geographic acceptance of tattoos and piercings, and way more accepted in the coastal areas. So obviously the West Coast and the East Coast have much more acceptance of it than in the Central States.
Shanae had, you know, touched on the issue, like, you know, 10 years ago, there may have been more of an association of like a more negative connotation of people who use tattoos or piercings. Do you find any of your patients who may be using body modifications as a way of dealing with negative emotions or pain? And is that should that be a cause of concern for pediatricians and our parents?
I want to say no. I have had clinics all over the city. So I have clinics where I see homeless kids, and I have clinics where I see kids whose families are way up in the Microsoft chain. So for the most part, actually, I don't really feel that people get tattoos when they're super bummed out or as a way to deal with their negative emotions. Rather, many times I see them considering it when they start to feel better. That, because you see it in people who are happy. So like you watch TV on a Sunday and pretty much everybody on the sports field has a tattoo. And or if you watch MTV or YouTube, most of the people that you see there performing have a tattoo. So, and they don't seem pretty bummed out, you know, when you're watching them. So, I don't think people see getting one as an expression of negative. But, I mean, I'm certain that there probably is that data out there, but I don't think it's been, I haven't read it. You know what I mean? I have maybe anecdotally once or twice I've seen it, but for the most part, I don't experience that in my clinics or my patients, older young adults. But I think it'd be a good study, but I just don't think people do that when they're sad. I mean, maybe if they've lost a loved one and they want to have that be the name. Actually, I'll take that back. I've seen that in some people who either lost a friend or parent or child, that they would put either their name or something that reminded them of them as a memory. But I don't think that's necessarily a negative. You know, I think that's more a sign of strength, to be honest with you, and in a positive way as opposed to a negative way. You know what I mean? I feel it's a really good question. I haven't actually asked that question before.
To kind of switch gears a little bit, I think in your article you mentioned there were metals used in tattoo ink, and I was doing some other research and some other articles and read that, you know, metals are considered a carcinogen, actually, and could be cancer-causing. So considering the fact that teens and young adults are getting these permanent tattoos that they're seeping into their skin, should they be concerned about long-term exposure to potentially cancer-causing substance?
There's been, I think, a paper published, someone interviewed me last week about this, which is that they noticed that if you some lymph node biopsies separate from the tattoo site had the ink in it. Yeah, I know you probably already read that. So I think at this point what to make of that is that's the lymph system doing its job. And I don't think, from what I've reviewed too, that they've actually clearly delineated. I mean, there's certain silver metals or other things that are, or I think is in the paper, that could be causing a reaction. But in general, the tattoo ink is inert. And the tattoo inks have been around for a long time, and no one's associated that with any particular cancer. So I think at this point, the case reports are just that. But I don't think, in general, that long-term, at least as far as I know, is worrisome, as long as the tattoo artists are using the ink that is the standard ink that is supposed to be used.
Just wanted to make sure we cover as much about, you know, the health risk, but also I know you sort of briefly mentioned the issue of tattoos and employment. So I guess, you know, there are other consequences, social, maybe even physical consequences of having doing body modification. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about some of those, including employment,
right,
and the connection between the tattoos.
There,
and
again, what I said earlier, there's definitely parts of the country or world where a visible tattoo, especially visible, would be face or neck, hands, that may interfere with getting a job, because maybe it's an industry where the person, if you're getting you're waiting tables or whatever, that the people would be fearful of someone that had that, and so they wouldn't go to that restaurant, for example. So many employers, and again, it depends on what part of the country, would hesitate to hire somebody with a particularly visible tattoo. I think you should really think hard about something that's really visible before you do it. The permanence of this is pretty huge. If you want to have a tattoo removed, it's very, very, very painful or expensive. So if you get a dermabrasion where they try to rub the tattoo off, that hurts and just leaves another scar. And if you get it removed by laser, it's very expensive. It can cost up to $1,000 and not covered by insurance and may not totally work. So those are really important things that people need to know. That being said, if someone has a non-visible tattoo, like on their upper arm, back, and they're wearing clothes, so it would not interfere with employment because nobody would ever see it. An interesting piece, though, because many people want their tattoos seen. That's why they got the tattoo.
Good. Well, I know you said that there were regulations in place regarding tattoos and piercings with minors, and I know you mentioned you actually went to a tattoo parlor to kind of see what was going on as far as sanitation and licensing and all that other stuff, but what do you recommend teens do? How can they be sure that their tattoo artist is licensed or that their piercer is licensed and that the venue that they're going to is, you know, it's clean, that they're following the proper procedures for sanitation and infection control?
Well, in this report, we do talk a lot about the states and what states require proof of age. So the first thing I recommend is for someone is to go and download this report because it has all the, in one table, all of the rules per state. And then I think people should go to a piercing salon or studio first, but not the day they're going to get it, and take a look at what the piercer or the tattooist is going to do. So they should definitely go and see the technique that's being used, and I'll talk to the other people that are there, and go with a friend, take notes, and make a healthy decision about something, and then go back another day. Don't just go on a whim, and go to a couple. The piercing salon that are excellent, they change the gloves a couple times while they're in between different parts of the procedure. The room should be well lit so that the piercer or tattooist can see what it's doing. They should, again, like I said, should check ID. Ask about immunizations. Not all do, but they should. Mm-hmm. And again, just making sure that visibly looking around to see if it's a place where you want to spend 2 or 3 hours and come out of it happy and without regret.
Right.
I think the thing I want to make sure people take away from this is that if you have any doubt or concern, take a deep breath and wait. You can get a temporary tattoo with henna, or even a temporary tattoo, and just see how that feels. Because then, after a couple of weeks, it's gone, and then you can have decided whether that was okay or not. Read this report. A smart health consumer is one that can live their life without feeling like they've made a mistake, and then if it's after that and you want to do it, make sure you, again, go with a friend and think about where you're going to be in the next 1, 2, 3, 4 years with it, employment-wise. And if after all of that you want to do it, then go for it.
Well, thank you, Dr. Brunner, for all your wonderful information and advice. And I think the information that you provided can definitely help our teens and young adult listeners to make a more knowledgeable and informed decision about their bodies. And so I just want to thank you for joining us today, and thank you to all our listeners for tuning in for another episode of Teen Health Matters.